53 years ago, I arrived on the campus of Phillips Academy in Andover, Massachusetts. Like both Presidents Bush, I would spend several years there. None of their classmates and none of mine were female. Almost all of their classmates and almost all of mine were white, as were all of the men who taught us. I'm not acquainted with either former president. I understand that they were happy at Andover. I can't say that I was, but I recently went back to meet with some people involved in a project that couldn't have happened when I was there.
We're putting on this play, which is really exciting because it was written by our very own Dr. Woodbine.
Ashley Scott is a senior at Andover. She's female and she's black, and she's sitting in the audience section of a small theater space in George Washington Hall.
And I don't usually participate in theater and dance productions. This is actually my very first one in the entire time that I've been here. But Dr. Woodbine was my basketball coach for 2 years, and I really felt like if I could connect with him again before I left, it would just be amazing. So especially with basketball involved.
And basketball is most certainly involved. It has been involved in the life of professor and coach Anajay X. O. Woodbine since he was a child.
Probably when I was 12 years old and I lost my coach and father figure, Manny Wilson. My mother was a single parent in Roxbury, and he meant everything to me. He was my mentor. He opened the gym on Saturday mornings for us when we would have been out in the street probably contending with the gangs. And when he passed away, I lost my innocence. And I went to the court and I was looking for Manny, and I felt him there. Ever since then, the court became a place for me of memory, a place where I go back and sort of try to recover my innocence, I guess.
While the students rehearse the play he's written, Anajay Woodbine and I talk about that connection to basketball, that reverence for the court as an arena for ritual. It might not have developed if Woodbine hadn't been an excellent player. He played for 2 years at Yale University, and then in 2000, after his sophomore year, he quit the team. And in a letter to the Yale Daily News explaining his decision, he referred to his determination to pursue, quote, the higher aims of divine purpose and truth, which, as it turned out, brought him back to the basketball court.
That was a glorious sort of revelation. I knew it in my bones. I could feel it. But how to say it in a way that would make sense. It took 10 years to actually find the language to express what was actually happening in this space. That was the struggle.
As a graduate student in the philosophy and psychology of religion at Boston University, Woodbine did his research by playing basketball on the same playgrounds in the Roxbury, Dorchester, and Mattapan sections of Boston where he'd played as a teenager. Some of the tournaments in which he played served as memorials to black men who had died young. Their images and names were preserved in banners hung on the fences around the courts. After games, Woodbine would try to explore with the other players the meaning of what they were doing.
I remember the first interview I did was CJ, a young man who I write about in the book. And I asked him, I said, what is the most profound experience you've had on the court? And he immediately goes into when his cousin was shot and murdered. And he said, I got on that court and I played with a sad face on, but no one could steal the ball. And he said, I don't know what it is, but my cousin, he just held the ball for me. And then I began to see the pattern over and over and over again in the other stories.
Woodbine found that basketball as ritual didn't necessarily translate into basketball as transcendence.
Today, you know, CJ is in prison. You know, he just mailed me a letter telling me he's playing ball in prison and he's finding hope through basketball in prison. It gives him a sense of transcendence that he can go on living, but it has not changed the external circumstances in his life.
Basketball is tremendously important to the young men about whom you're writing. Some of them even say, I don't know where I would be without basketball.
Yes.
I might be dead. But does it have the capacity to take them beyond basketball?
Yeah. These young black men are pushed to the court by poverty. They're pushed by racism. They're pushed by this sense of oppression. But on the other hand, when you get into that space, you can experience a level of freedom that helps to resist and transcend that. And so how do you live with this double thing, this double consciousness in this space?
It's a question that resists an easy answer, which is perhaps why it provoked Anaji Woodbine to write his book, Black Gods of the Asphalt, and to take the project even further.
It was storytelling. This was inner-city, street-level storytelling. And I thought, why not actually consciously do this on the stage, right, and create a conscious ritual space in the theater? And so I wrote a script along with my father and my wife to try to tell these stories in a way that can impact audiences beyond the streets.
And involve characters who are not of the streets, at least in some cases. These are not all street kids. You're laughing but I'm right, right?
You're right. Most of these kids are not. And what's been profound for me is that the process in theater of coming up with a production is in itself like ritual.
Even as Dr. Woodbine and I talked about his play, which features the stories of three young black men and the people who are most important in their lives on and off the basketball court, two Andover students bring the words of his characters to the small stage.
You think this court is empty? When I'm talking, it ain't just me talking. When I'm singing, boy, it ain't just me singing.
One of the students plays a grandmother named Alice. She's addressing her basketballing grandson, Derek.
I got a whole symphony of angels out here with me, boy. What's wrong with your ears, your eyes, and your heart, Derek? You can't hear that?
Grandma, when I think about it, that's how I play basketball. It's where I get all my pain out. My mother ain't given me nothing but pain my whole life, Grandma. Foster home. You know I was almost raped the last time my mother sent me to a foster home? A few nights ago, my mother locked me out of the house and I froze all night.
What do you hope happens as a result of folks here seeing this play?
My hope is that the embodied oppression, the internal unconscious injuries that have to do with race, gender, and class that we carry around with us, those memories that hurt that we push under the surface, that those are resurfaced for a while during this play and that we examine them in the open light and potentially start a conversation that has the power to transform the way we interact with one another. And many of these young people are finding a voice. They're speaking to people who they may not have in the past. And I do think that theater and art can give us experiences that overcome all of the ideas and concepts and things that divide us.
To overcome the ideas and concepts that divide us, it's a brave ambition. Perhaps it's never been more necessary. It's impossible for me to imagine anybody trying to do something like that at the Andover I used to know. But in a place populated by students of both genders, students of various colors and backgrounds, and a teacher/basketball coach who came up through the street ball ranks, maybe something will come of it. The play based on Anaji Exo Woodbine's Black Gods of the Asphalt will be performed in mid-May at Phillips Academy, a better reason than most for me to go back again. Our story was produced by Jackie Bamberger.